At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin. That's www.TRAIFHUSTLIN.com. Your home for all things barbecue.
Hello.
How do we
Tony,
share
hello. I'm not sure I'm saying. Hello, Tony, hello. Not our world.
All right, so we are live. This is At the Table with Tony, the pandemic episode. We have a couple of guests.
The plague. Eric, how do you say a plague? A pest, right?
A pest.
I'm sorry. This is the a pest version of At the Table with Tony.
Unfortunately, Pat, we can't see his face. I'm very sad about that. I wanted to look at your face, Pat.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
I don't. All right, let's keep going.
All right, so let's introduce ourselves. We'll start off with the ladies. We have Danielle Oteri. So Danielle, you start off, say who you are, and you know, then we'll go to Michaela, and then we'll go around the room.
All right, I'm Danielle Oteri from Feast on History and Arthur Avenue Food Tours.
Hi, I'm Michaela Musolino, and I'm a singer, and I sing Sicilian folk music and Southern Italian folk music.
John Viola, co-host of the Italian American podcast.
Tony Cortello, originally from New Orleans, now living in New York the past few years and working in the food industry.
And we have Pete Ferrero.
I directed the movie The Price of Fame and have my own podcast called The Pop-Up Podcast.
We have Eric Lavin.
NJ, Italian high school teacher. Nobody important.
Calabrese.
Proud Calabrese.
You are important.
And the one with no picture is the one and only Patrick O'Boyle.
How are you? Why am I on? What are we doing?
We're just going to talk. We haven't seen each other in a long time. I grew a beard.
I had my hair cut into a corona. Just like
your little tonsure going on there, like St. Anthony?
Yes, I have a tonsure and I have a beard.
Hey, Pat, I'm sorry it's a few days late, but buon onomastico.
Thank you. And today is the Annunciation.
Yeah.
So Annunziata. Today is the name day for Annunziata. And yesterday was the traditional day for St. Gabriel, the archangel. So yesterday was for Gabriella and Gabriella. And that, and a couple of bucks will get you right on the New York City subway.
Well, not anymore. I think they shut the subway down almost.
Yeah, it's down.
I mean, so really, the real reason why I wanted to invite some of you guys on, the ladies and gentlemen on the show, is to talk a little bit about how we are spending our time during this quarantine period. This is like nothing we've ever experienced. I know in my lifetime, and I'm sure in your lifetime, I don't even know what this can be compared to. Maybe World War II, but even then, you were allowed to go out. You were allowed to work. I don't know. I don't. Do you guys have anything that this can be compared to?
I don't think it compares well to 1918, to the Spanish influenza. I think because we know a lot more now, and communication's a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. So I think that I think it's a whole new animal. I think it's similar to 19. I think it's kind of like 1918 marries September 11th. And I don't mean that in a funny sense. Mm-hmm. If you lived in New York, you know how unfunny the entire experience was, or Northern New Jersey. But I think in my opinion, I'm just going to say this, it's a combo of what I would imagine the Spanish influenza was mixed with the Second World War. I mean, a mix with September 11th.
I compare it to for me, Hurricane Katrina, except even at that time, you had a place of refuge if you left the city. But now, obviously, it's a pandemic. So we're all in this boat together in a very abnormal sense, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, I think the thing I want to talk a little bit about also is how it's affecting our day-to-day lives. I mean, obviously, all of us have jobs, and now being stuck in our houses, we really can't do what we're supposed to be doing or what we feel we should be doing or what we need to be doing. So I would like to get – I know, and everybody here is affected by it, from the teachers to Danielle has the food tours. I know, Michaela, I was looking forward to going to your concert this weekend, and that was –
just so you know, I haven't worked – my last night of work was February 22nd. I was in Italy when this happened. Wow. That was my first concert for a concert tour. And by the time we finished that show, the entire tour was canceled. And then I had to escape. My friends made sure I got out within a few days. Otherwise, they were afraid I was going to get stuck there. So I'm just I came home and I self-quarantined. And then by the time I was counting the days down for my, you know, my 14 days to end, and because I was in the Lombardia.
Wow.
So
you walked out,
it was all over. Not even. I had like a few more days to go, and then everything hit the fan in New York City, and everything got canceled in New York City, and it was just a domino effect. So I'm just, you know, I'm like, I'm here. I'm getting a little tired of this, but you got to do what you got to do.
And obviously it affected a lot of events, because this is a big time of year for St. Joseph's tables and for St. Patrick's Day parades, and, you know, just going out and having a good time with your friends and family. And really, I mean, the reason why I want to talk to Tony a little bit is because he's so involved with the St. Joseph's festival, or the St. Joseph's parade and the society they have down in New Orleans. So what was it like to not really have a full experience this year? I mean, I know I know, John, you were there as well this year. So but it was kind of a,
it was abbreviated. You know, we do a, it's the St. Joseph's week in New Orleans is a very special week. You have the St. Joseph altars, of course. You have St. Patrick's Day parade starting as well. And come Thursday, you know, there's just a buzz in the air around the whole city, specifically downtown with our club in downtown New Orleans. And Friday afternoon, Wednesday night, the mayor had, you know, put a stop to the parade. And at first, it was, you know, people, oh, it's overreaction, it's this, it's that. And then, well, we're still going to do our event on Saturday night, which is the ball where they introduce the queen and her court. And it's just a great atmosphere, a great fun time to be involved with. And then Friday we have the Pasta Consarde, and we have a little get together Friday night as well. And by the time Friday morning came, you know, that black cloud was starting to roll in, and it was fun. People made the best of a tough situation. John came, and David Greco, and came, and really we all did the best we could, and we all enjoyed it. But you could tell that it was just a sense of the unknown coming, and not knowing that, is this a weekend event or is it really going to be 2 weeks? And so it was, this being our 50th anniversary, there were a lot of things that we're really looking forward to. For me, it's a family event. My whole family is involved, from cousins to my father, who was one of the original members. So it was just a very tough pill to swallow, not having that 50th year celebration. But it's life. You deal with it, and we'll celebrate twice as much next year.
That's a good point. I was saying, when this is all done, hopefully it's sooner rather than later, but all of these, especially the St. Joseph's tables that were postponed or pushed off or canceled, we should have everybody should go out and have one, because
we have started to discuss a possibility of, when we have a better sense of understanding of what's going on, of rescheduling some type of event. It may be a shorter event, but I would like that. I think the club deserves it for itself. I think the people, not only of the United States, but of the world, they're going to want to celebrate and have a drink and have some fun. You know, why not celebrate the end of a tough time?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. I mean, we have to, I guess life, I mean, again, like we said, we really haven't had anything like this in a long time. So really, when this is over, we'll have a reason to celebrate.
Of course.
Nobody will ever want to cook at home again. Everyone's going to go to every restaurant that's open every night.
Well, that's
as somebody who eats at restaurants like nonstop, I'm loving. I feel fresh. We're eating all this pasta. I feel great. I have energy. I'm going to start cooking at home for good. I'm done with Uber Eats and all that stuff.
Yeah. I love to cook, but I also love to eat out. I mean, that's kind of, you know, the Tony Mangia, that's why I got the Bonzette. But, believe me, I love cooking home and I love spending time at home, but I'd love to be able to share a meal, or to be able to, to frequent or to give business to these places that are hurting now. And it's tough. I mean, like, I'm kind of afraid to go out to eat, even if it's, I know you can't eat in the place. Even to take it to go, even to do an Uber Eats, I'm just, you know, you don't know. To me, I'm just a little leery. So this is a good segue to talk a little bit about how Arthur Avenue is handling this whole pandemic. So what's going on up there, Danielle?
It's really tough. It's a mixed bag because you've got stores and restaurants. Restaurants are usually, especially at this time of year, with like shows going on at the Bronx Zoo and the New York Botanical Garden. Then you start to come up on like the communions and graduations are usually doing fantastic. And, you know, they're shut down. Some of them, a couple of restaurants are staying open to do takeout. But the truth is most of Arthur Avenue's business comes in from outside the neighborhood. The neighborhood itself is, you know, a pretty poor neighborhood. They can't afford, you know, to be spending money on the old cutlets delivered. So it's really tough. I'm worried about a couple of them in particular that they are going to be able to make it. And as far as the shops go, some are closed down. And then there's some that are kind of, you know, doing surprisingly well and like adapting in amazing ways. So two in particular, Title Brothers, who my family shared a wall with between 1918 and 1980, so good friends. They supply restaurants largely, so you can imagine they're doubly impacted, but they've actually, they're doing deliveries now in their trucks that they usually normally use to deliver to restaurants, to homes. And they're very smart. They included that we will deliver toilet paper and bottled water along with your, you know, San Marzano tomatoes and all. And then the other one is Vince's Meat Market, which is in the spot where my family had their meat market. And the youngest generation of the shop, who is Peter, is his name, is in his early 30s, had started a web business a couple of years ago and got really in with like hashtag keto on Instagram. And so they've built up their business very well. And they're doing incredibly. I actually put in an order and went in for curbside pickup, and they had about 100 chickens all shrink wrapped that were getting ready to go out for mail order. So here's this little shop that's doing amazingly well. So the ones that are able to modernize are doing incredibly well. They're doing like Christmas Eve well right now.
And I think that that's what's going to happen. I think that in a way that this pandemic is going to change the way that we do business in general. Talking to my friend Peter, he does a lot of production work. And he does a lot of, he's doing a podcast. And so I'm interested to think, how do you think this is going to affect you? Is it going to affect you positively, negatively? What are kind of some of your thoughts on that?
It's interesting. I shoot a lot of weddings. So in terms of the wedding business, it's been an absolute fucking nightmare. I'm sorry, can I curse? I'm sorry.
You're being honest.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know what it is? Nobody's canceled their dates, but these brides, you know, they spend a lot of time planning their day and their special day and all that kind of stuff. And literally every wedding date in April and March just have to be pushed to another date. And sometimes it's now a Thursday or a day that they didn't even want, you know what I mean? Or people that were waiting all this time, 2 years, to get married, now have to push to another, you know, 9 months. And then of course, for all of us, it's like, you know, do we even have that date available now? Right? You know what I mean? So far so good with all of that, but I feel bad for the brides. And I just did a podcast with a bunch of chefs a couple nights ago, and they're hurting, you know? I mean, these restaurants are really hurting. I mean, they've had to lay off their staff. Some of them, like you said, are doing takeout, so they're able to kind of bring back some people, but it's still minimal. And there's just so many restaurant employees right now with like literally nothing to do and nowhere to go and not really sure what to do.
I run a restaurant in Manhattan, a quick service pizzeria. We shut down. There's no one to serve.
You see some of these pictures on Facebook or online, and the streets in New York they're completely empty a couple of cars here and there, a couple of people walking around, but it's not the city that never sleeps is sleeping.
We discussed opening up this week, and I was down there a lot just cleaning and organizing and seeing what was happening. And we're also located in a building that has a major hotel. The hotel is shut down.
Wow.
So, you know, I love to hear the fact that the neighborhood places are doing well. That makes me very excited because I think, to me, my family, my brother still owns a neighborhood coffee shop in New Orleans, and it's in the middle of a neighborhood. And those are the people that are going to come back the quickest because they have to. They have no choice. And so it's great to hear about this new normal you will see of people adapting. Everything is going to change, whether you wanted to or like it. The fact is the world just changed drastically in the last month, and business is going to have to change with it or you're going to be left behind. So it's awesome to see that the neighborhood spots are getting real creative. And for me, that's, you know, that's where I like to go. I don't want to go eat at Somewhere I Can Eat or Anywhere USA. You know, you want the people who are in the neighborhoods, who are really part of the community, to get that, to keep their success going. So hopefully this impacts them as little as possible, but everyone's taking an impact on every level.
You mentioned a new normal, and really this question, I guess, goes to Eric now, because the new normal, you're a teacher and teachers teach in a classroom usually, right? I mean, that's the normal. So now how are you finding to teach these kids on the internet? I mean, are you doing Zoom lessons? I mean, what is going on?
So that's a good question. I Zoom with my upper levels. I teach Italian 1, 2, 3, so freshmen, juniors, and sophomores. So my level 3, my juniors, sophomores. I Zoom with them just so I could get them speaking. We had I would say we had like 2 days to kind of start throwing together things before we left the actual school building, the premises. So I was able to give them a novel, a PDF, that is. I had to upload Google Classroom. I'm using technology that I never use myself, and I'm actually ashamed because I should know it. But I'm just trying to keep it going. I was able to give them textbooks too, so I could post stuff online. I could tell them to look in the textbook, reference things. My upper levels, like I said, I Zoom with them. My younger levels, I have to think about something I got to do, because I'm probably going to have to wind up Zooming with them as well, because I need them to speak. I need them to practice. It's kind of tough because I have 85 students. Wow. And I find myself writing, you know, 85 emails, you know, responding to them, giving them feedback, because otherwise you don't learn. You know, if they're making a mistake, you got to let them know. And unfortunately, if I had all 20 of them together and I know that all 20 of them are making the same mistake, it, you know, it's easy like that. But,
and also I heard that they kind of canceled standardized testing in New Jersey. Is that true?
Yeah, so the governor, or I believe it could have even been a federal decision to cancel standardized testing, which is good. So NJSLA, so a lot of these kids, you know, especially for your core subjects, English and math, they don't have to really worry about that anymore. I do know that as of right now, 2 states have canceled their public school through the end of the academic year.
Wow.
So Kansas and Virginia. So I'm a little worried that I might be in this holding pattern until about June.
You know, it's sad, because especially for the college kids and the high school seniors, they're not going to be able to graduate in May when you would graduate, or in June for the high schoolers. So, I mean, really, it's interesting to think, are they going to just postpone the graduation till everything blows over, or you're just in limbo.
I can jump in on that.
Okay, go ahead.
I teach college as an adjunct.
Mm-hmm.
And we got an email saying, and it was a very sympathetic, and I think very well-written email, saying canceling graduation and all the exercises around graduation. And the president of the university said that there will be a graduation. We don't know when. You know, I took that as meaning maybe the summer, maybe the fall. The kids will get that to the best of everyone's ability, that graduation moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not going to happen to when it was scheduled.
Yeah, it's a shame. It really is. I mean, now obviously one of the biggest countries that have been affected by this has been Italy. So I'm going to talk to John, and Michaela, you were there.
Anthony, can I just jump in one thing about teaching?
Yeah, go right ahead. Yeah, please.
I was really interested in what Eric had to say, because there's 21 years between Eric and I. It's an actual, technically a generation. 19. You're 95. Yeah, 20 years. 20 years different.
94.
Oh. 94, right. All right. So, yeah, 19, 20 years, depending on how the math is. Because you're November and I'm January. But, you know, I'm surprised to hear him say that he had never used the technology. I am completely – I try with technology. It's just, you know, I'm – and I'm going somewhere with this. But remember, email came out when I was in college. So I didn't grow up with this. And the internet really took off after I left law school. Or toward the end of law school. So this is not second nature to me. So I had said to my students, when we were tracking the news and we saw that it was foreseeable that classes would be canceled, I said to them, don't worry, somehow we'll figure out how to do it online. And, you know, the university has bent over backwards. They'll help us any way they can to teach us how to teach online. They've offered us all kinds of support. So I started teaching online this past Monday. But the amazing thing about, now I use Zoom. My kids took took to it like fish like water, because they're 20. They're more or less 20, 19, 18, 20. And a few of them are a year or two older. This is their world. So when we went on, I'm the one fumbling, trying to figure everything out, and it wasn't so much the biggest impediment wasn't so much the technology. It was the feel, because I'm used to the feel of the classroom. But it was just totally second nature to them. I mean, they didn't even bat an eye. And they were, the way you guys are beating up on me to have a live camera there. Well, we can't see you. And why can't we see you? You can see us. And I was like, what do you need to see me for? But the reason why I bring that up is that for them, virtual learning, meaning that I only saw an image of them and they were all in their respective houses. And when they spoke in class, the camera would shoot to them. To them, that's reality. And that's what really struck me, was the age gap, because to me, I feel like this is a temporary measure, but to them, this feels like normal.
That's a great Tony, question. Can I ask Pat a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pat, we've been doing the podcast together for about a year and a half now. Do you feel like that helped you prepare to teach remotely?
That's a brilliant question, as would come from you, John. I think that the podcast helped me in this sense. I'm at the front of a classroom because I need to see faces, because seeing faces, I can gauge kids, their comprehension, their participation. You know, you see a kid that looks like his dog just died. Maybe something happened in their personal life. You don't want to call on them that much that day. Someone's smiling, they're on the phone all the time, you know that they're texting with a significant other and you gotta have to fight to get their attention and you have to tell them to put the phone down. That's because I'm from the real life world. I'm from where I see you, you see me. Teaching online, I didn't see the person I was speaking to. So for the students who chose to not show their faces, I had no idea. But I mean, they could just have had the volume on and not paid attention. I couldn't gauge the kids. And the podcast taught me that, because the podcast taught me of speaking into the ether. So I speak out into the universe and I don't know where it lands or how it's received. That prepared me to feel confident that even though I don't see the faces, the message is still coming across.
I think that's just one last thing. I think that's where I'm more like Pat. I'm more old school in that I want to see them. I want to have them react. I mean, I think it also goes back to my theories about how you should learn a language. You know, I want the kids to be able to survive in Italy. I know it's one thing for them to remember their modal verbs, volere, potere, dovere, how to conjugate, how to this, what's the loro form, what's this. I get that. I want them to be able to remember Italian. I want them to be able to use it. That's why I prefer a face-to-face conversation, because at the end, that's how Italians are, right? We're
social.
We converse with one another. We're social. I have them do this activity called a sondaggio. They want to kill me every time I tell them that we're going to do it. And I make them go around, ask questions, write questions down. They speak to one another. And they kind of foster almost like a semi-natural conversation, a free-flowing conversation. That's what I want them to do. That's what I want them to learn. I can't teach through a camera and make them get it and then have them look at a textbook, because, you know, then they're going to be grown up adults and they're going to say, well, you know, I took Italian, but I don't remember anything of it. So that's the part that I want to get away from. But
can I just jump in to say one last thing? And I realize, and I'll be done, because I know it's not our podcast.
No, talk. That's why you're here.
I don't want to say too much, but the one thing I'm trying to get across to the kids is that what has struck me through this entire thing was that I said to them, this is your September 11th moment. And I said, I was 26 when September happened. And I said, you know, I think for my generation, we can, as a generation, Generation X, put everything, we can speak in time of everything that came before and after September 11th. It was almost like a demarcation line of the old world and the new world came. And I guess for my parents' generation, that would have been the Kennedy assassination. For our grandparents, maybe the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And I said to them, you know, I understood this is going to be your, I said, this, I have the feeling that this is going to be your September 11th, where you judge life from before and after. But whether that's the case or not, the one thing I can say is that without a doubt, had this happened when I was a sophomore or freshman in college, which would have been 1993, 1994, there is no way, or even the spring of 95, it just, the world would have stopped because the technology was not there. We would have had a, colleges would have had to shut down and figured out how to repeat a year. I mean, that would have been a total, there was no such thing as remote learning. The internet was at its infancy. Remember, when I was a freshman in college, I was the first class at Seton Hall to get email. So the one thing I've said to them is that the one advantage you have over us is that you really can, life for you can very much go on remotely. That would not have been a possibility with us.
That's a great point. That's a great point. But so I want to talk a little bit about, I guess, to John and to Patrick and even to Michaela about, you know, because you guys have your finger on the pulse of what's going on in Italy. And Italy, I mean, you see the reports that are coming out of that country, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, I talked to some of my family there, and it's just you don't know what to do. You because you can't hug them because you're 4,000 miles away, and you won't be allowed to hug them anyway because of social distancing. But I mean, what can you talk a little bit to that? Can you talk about, are you hearing anything? What are your thoughts on what Italy's going through?
Talking to me?
Oh, you, John, Pat, or Michaela? You know, I guess you guys. You know,
I would just say one word: fear. For me, uh-huh. Everyone I talk to is just afraid because they don't know. Because I think it's real. I think that, you know, you watch TV here, you watch press conferences. It's still very much an isolated event here. I think that people in Italy, it's very much more close to home. And I think they're much more fearful because it's a possibility that it could be you or your household or your family. And I think Americans feel a little bit more removed from that.
John, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's much to add in terms of the same thing those of us that are in quarantine are going through. I mean, obviously, it's at a greater scale, and it's got a much, much more significant death toll at this point, and the government activity has been going on for a few weeks more, and they are a little bit more hardline than we are, but I think we're approaching that. But I think the thing that I'm keep coming back to from Italy is, and we talk about this a lot on our show, the sort of psychological difference between being Italian and American as it relates to the state, to the government. And I think that there's, you know, I remember that video the actor from Gomorra put up. His sister had passed away, and there she was in bed behind him. And he was like, you know, we called the state, we called the province, the region, the police, that nobody answered our calls. And here we are with the, you know, lifeless member of our family. And I every time Pat and I do work there, I'm always met with a lot of disillusionment about what the system can do for you. And I think that's kind of fair in many ways. And I think a lot of the local mayors that we've seen, and it's become sort of, you know, the Italian charm and our ability, I think, as a people to put a good face on a bad thing for having done it for thousands of years. I think that comes through, and there's a lot of great local leadership. But I think having that disillusionment with the state, even if in this country you're disillusioned with the party in power or the person in office, I think there's still always a belief that the American system will overcome something. And I don't think the Italians have that. And Michaela, you could speak better than I could, being an Italian national. If I'm wrong, I hope.
American, totally American. But
wait, I thought you were born over there.
No, I was born here.
Oh, I didn't know that. You're Sicilian, so good.
But to add to both what you and Pat said, first, what Pat said, Pat mentioned a word that I've been thrown around since I was there back in February, is fear. And I don't like to see that in people's faces. And the only thing I've been doing for the last month is pretty much going to the supermarket at a safe distance, obviously. But I don't like to see other Americans walking around with fear. And, you know, yes, this is a crisis. Yes, it's something serious. And we do have to take precaution. But don't be afraid. And I'm very angry because I see the media is just fanning the flames of this and just running after the worst possible news ever. And it happened. It was happening in Italy from the second they announced that they found coronavirus in Codogno that Friday morning on the 21st. It was, how much fear can we instill in these poor people? And it was the most stressful 4 days, I think, it's not that stressful here as much because I don't care now. I don't care what the press is saying. I know how to sift through the information, but to see what they were doing and how they were fanning the flames of sensationalism, instead of just telling people, look, this is what's going on. This is what's happening. This is what could happen. This is what you have to do. This is what you should do. And then let the people decide. And I see that here too. And that angers me because fear is going to cripple everybody. Don't make people fear. Just give them the facts. That's it. Get out of the way. Give us the facts. And
mean fear crippling Italy, you mean?
No, because it's like those.
But I don't think they would have listened if they didn't. I think Italy only works on panic.
I give them more credit than that, Pat. I do. And you know, talking to my friends now, they said like everybody's really scared. Like, talking to my friends in Cremona, like everybody's afraid, because it's like hanging over you like this blackout. And I know other people are bringing this up, and it's like, you know, Italy loses just like we do thousands of people every year in the flu season. Where's the press? Press doesn't say anything. Every person that's everybody that's getting diagnosed with coronavirus, so and so has coronavirus. So I really don't care when a celebrity gets coronavirus. I'm not interested. If my a relative of mine gets it, a friend of mine, my neighbor, yeah, they're important to me. I don't want to hear that, you know, somebody is on a film set and they got coronavirus. What's that going to do for anybody? Stop with this. You know, tell us what's, you know, and this is going into my next topic, which is something that that John brought up, the difference between the Italians and the Americans. The Italians are, you know, they're angry what the state could do. As, you know, every day I see what's going on here in the U.S., and every day it makes me more and more proud that I am an American because, you know, look at all these people that are just stepping up and doing things. Look at all these companies that are changing their production so they can start putting out, companies that don't even manufacture respirators are manufacturing respirators. Companies that don't even make masks are making masks. The National Cathedral in Washington just found like 500,000 face masks they donated to local hospitals in Washington, wow. D.C. People in communities are stepping up and doing things and helping people. And, you know, you see what's going on with our medical technicians, how everybody's just stepping up. And that's good. And I'm proud. Nobody's sitting around saying, we got to wait for FEMA. We got to wait for the government to do this. You know, the government's doing what it can do, but you know, government can't move quickly. It just can't. But individually, we can work miracles. Individually, people can do it. And America's like, we're not going to wait for anybody. We're just going to do what we got to do. And I see it too, just in everyday exchanges, because, you know, and I'm sure you're all going through it too. Your friends will call, are you okay? Do you need anything? Or we'll call them, are you okay? Can we get you anything? What, you know, it's this network we have because we are American. And I'm very proud of that. So I think if we could just, we get rid of the fear. And I if there was a way we could reassure the Italians, you know, you're going to get through this. Everybody's going to help you. We just had, what is it called? Samaritan's Purse from down North Carolina. They just went to Cremona, set up a field hospital in Cremona. And a friend of mine in Cremona said, look, we got everybody. We got the Russians, we got the Cubans, we got the Chinese, we got the Americans. Now everybody's trying to help us. I'm proud of that. I'm proud that people are doing that. And I wish there's some way we could do something more physically for Italy, because I don't want them to be scared. I don't want them to be afraid of anything. And I want them to get through this. I don't know what we can do.
Can I say something to follow up on that, in my opinion? I think the greatest accomplishment is that they've gotten through this. I mean, everyone parodies Italy as being this basket. It's kind of like a something between a buffoon and a basket case in Europe. And, the fact that 95% of Europe was savage until the Italians came on the scene is something they seem to forget and overlook. Italy, because it's kind of a warm, open country, had a lot of cultural reasons why they made decisions that they made that helped the virus spread, stuff like, multi-generational families living in the same place, grandchildren who see their grandparents on a daily basis. So a lot of the stuff that we're really proud of that makes us who we are.
Right.
I think the Wall Street Journal had an article on this today. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I saw the headline. A lot of the stuff that makes us who we are is a lot of the stuff that put us at harm's risk. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is that the Italians, the numbers are going down. And when everything hit the fan, the Italians have more or less recused themselves at home. Now, I think we've all seen the funny little video of the Italian mayor screaming and yelling and, you know, we're going to send the cops with flamethrowers from the president of the region of Campania. But you know, people around the world are kind of flouting the rules. And I think more, I think in general, the Italians have sucked it up and have pulled through this. So I think that they need to be complimented that they're not the buffoons that so many other countries in Europe and jealousy make them out to be on a regular basis. I think their biggest accomplishment is that they have held down the fort.
But that's also, and I think everybody here would understand that too. If you look at your parents and your grandparents, that's, you know, it's like, suck it up. We'll get through this. You know, that's a very, something very, what is that? It's part of the Italianità, you know?
Yeah.
We'll deal with it. We'll get through it. And I mean, who's been through more than the Italians, really? If you think, you know, with their history, and I know, like, you know, Pat and John, you guys are really up on, you know, I know you know your Italian history. Who's suffered more and who's endured more than they have? So I know they'll get through this. I just wish there's a way that we can, you know, how can you give them your support? Like, what's the most productive thing we can do? Can we send them, you know, is there medicine we can send them? Is there this?
When this all ends, go out and buy Italian.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Buy out.
I'm sorry?
They're going to meet Pat. Like, what else could I do? What else am I going to do?
True. Word. You know,
you know my daughter, my daughter's all upset. She's like, do we have to cancel Easter? Where are we going to get our Columbo? What's going to happen?
I have to tell you, for Easter, my wife and I, when this started, you know, becoming real, we live in an apartment in Brooklyn. So I said, okay, we got to make freezer space a premium. And we haven't cleaned out our freezer since we moved here. And somehow I had lost at the bottom of our freezer, because last year I'm dyslexic and dyscalculic, so I made 34 pastiera instead of the 10 that I was trying to make. I found a frozen pastiera in the bottom of my freezer. If we're really in the bunker by Easter, we can start shipping out slices to everybody.
It's fun you should say, because I got to beat the game.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pat, finish.
I got a frozen pizza game for emergency purposes.
Just to lighten the mood, when people started panic buying, Pat, you'd appreciate this. I went to the Lyndhurst ShopRite and they had panettone on sale. And I said, I wonder if it's still good. It's from Christmas. I wonder if it's not stale. And anyway, I took a gamble. Freshest, the best. I still got panettone downstairs. So still.
Absolutely.
I
FaceTimed my grandparents yesterday and I said, how you guys doing? They're like, good, we're almost done with the panettone you gave us at Christmas. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, no, it's fresh. It's in the tin. I'm like, that but they did say this is like living through the Depression and World War II.
Yeah.
So they did that once, they'll do it again.
But the Colomba have arrived from Italy. That was what I was most surprised to see on Arthur Avenue, one of those stores, Cherini Coffee and Gifts. They said that they're deliveries are even more on time than they usually are, and like they're like, what are we gonna do with all these Colombo? We have to let people know to buy online, because I don't know, it's kind of amazing. I mean, most of those are made in the region that's most affected right now, but those people are going to the Colombo factory at night and cranking them out, and they're here, so we gotta buy them. That's solidarity.
We should point out to everybody out there listening that if it's come from Italy and made that trip, it has no infection on it. That's part of the process. These things are sanitized. I mean, people have the sense that if you eat a product, it's not real. It's a myth. And you can absolutely enjoy guilt-free the delicacies of Italy right now.
We use a lot of all our flour is from Italy. And that's something right now that I'm really concerned about. You won't feel it today. You won't feel it tomorrow. But in the months ahead,
right,
where, you know, how is this going to affect us? You know, not only that, it's a perception problem. I think, you know, people not understanding that, you know, the strain that these companies in Italy are going to go through to make sure their products are and have always been top notch. But even now, there's going to be a whole rebranding possibly of some companies, I think, who are concerned about that.
That's true. That's a great point. That's a good segue into a little bit more food talk. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, obviously we've been quarantined. We've been stuck in our houses, in our apartments. So are you guys cooking more? Are you guys and gals cooking more? Or what is...
Every day.
Yeah?
Every day, too much.
So what's been on the menu?
Fresh baked bread. My girlfriend is Chilean, so she's been cooking some of her, her dishes she grew up with. And then, you know, we eat a lot of fresh vegetables right now. That's something that we've always done, actually. And now it's just very important because we all know, you know, we don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know what these stores are going to have. So we stocked up on some frozen items just in case. But we go to the grocery once a week and we're taking, you know, a lot of fresh vegetables. And it's been pasta. It's been a lot of salads. I love cooking sauce, so we did that last week. You know, made a big pot of sauce to last us for a few days, and it's nice. I mean, I love cooking, especially at home, because you can do whatever you feel like doing. You know, if you don't like it, that's your problem. You made it, so if you want to try something different, it's always nice to do that.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you feel that your New Orleans Italian food is different than the food up here?
Definitely.
In what sense?
Well, New Orleans has originally, I'm a culinary school graduate and from South Louisiana. And when people and cultures came to South Louisiana, you notice they all have a very similar progression, I guess you could say. And that they brought their food with them, and then, you know, New Orleanized it, I guess you could say. Whereas they left some of those, like, you know, crab meat cannelloni, believe it or not, you know, that most restaurants, Italian restaurants in New Orleans serve that.
I've never heard of it until now.
It's fantastic. Matter of fact, crab meat ravioli was invented by an Italian chef in New Orleans, and he won the San Francisco Culinary Festival back in the early 80s. And that was the first time Gioffredo Forcaro is his name. I believe he's passed away now, but it was just an amazing Italian chef who was taught French style cuisine, you know, 50, 60 years ago. And so you would see a lot of that. Whereas when I go to cities like, and now that I live here in New York, in Chicago, if it's not Italian American, it's a lot more tied to the traditions of whatever region of Italy that family may be from. And that's the biggest difference. Right now in New Orleans, you know, you have your second generation Vietnamese, and they have taken a lot of stuff from their homeland, and you're seeing the integration of banh mi's with a lot of the same products you would put on a po' boy. It's really, their food is interesting because you're seeing it right in front of you play out what maybe my grandparents did when they got to New Orleans, you know? And so that's the biggest difference that I see, is that due to the unique French influence of Southern Louisiana specifically, and the amount of fish you have around, there is a lot more of a thread you can see between the Germans, the English, the Spanish, the French, the Africans that have all settled in that area. Whereas when I come up here, or when I live here, you know, French food is French, and it's very tied to their homeland. Polish food is, you know, so that's the biggest difference, you know. But the biggest similarity is that it's still meant to be shared by families, which is the greatest thing. And which is just the best thing we have to offer, you know, is sharing those meals with our family, whether it's Italian or Vietnamese or whatever it might be. You know, that's the great thing.
Absolutely. Peter, I want to ask you, we usually go to Belmont Tavern on Monday nights. That's kind of like our that's like our hangout on Mondays. And
canceled.
Unfortunately, we can't go because of the whole quarantine. But they are offering takeout. Did you see that?
I saw they're doing takeout. I saw that Angelo's in Lyndhurst, which we go to.
Oh, another good spot.
And I did do some takeout from Angelo's. It was great. Because, you know, I'm as much as I'm trying to cook at home and I've been watching, I don't know if you guys know, but Food Network has all the old shows now on their app. So everything that was from the history, you can go back and watch. And I've been watching and kind of like recreating recipes and all that kind of stuff. But I've really been trying to support my local places the best that I can in this kind of this quarantine bullshit. But, you know, I think a point that was made in my podcast the other day that I think is super important that I don't think we don't talk about, but I have found myself, you know, with this, I think like yourself, Ant, we love going out to eat to the Belmont Tavern. Like you mentioned, we love, you know, kind of being social butterflies and interacting with people. It's just a part of, like, especially for somebody in film or, you know, in music, whatever, it's a part of our life. You know, we kind of always have a meeting or we always have a thing and we're always kind of like gravitating to something. And being stuck inside the house is, you know, and maybe it sounds fun at first and the first couple of days are entertaining and whatnot, but I don't know. I find myself maybe I want to say meditating or just doing a lot of thinking and whatnot. And in the podcast of the day, Mike Carino, who's a good friend of both of ours, he mentioned, you know, it's also a time right now for us to think about friends and family members that we know suffer with some mental illness and things of that nature, because this is like everything that they probably have been fearing. And it's a good time for us to all reach out to those friends, or if they're watching this and, you know, they're going through something, for them to, you know, reach out to us. Because I can tell you, just sitting home, you can get upset about just not being able to go out to Belmont Tavern or whatnot. But I think it's a point that should be made that, you know, if anybody's watching or listening and struggling with something, we're all, I'm sure, in all of our circles, we're all here for those people, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, you're right. In a way, I mean, like you said, yeah, it's fun. We're going to be off from work. This is going to be a party. But really, I mean, after a while, there's only so much TV you could watch because you are going to get depressed. I mean, yeah, you could read, I have a huge library, so I have plenty of books to read. But I mean, you know, you want that human interaction. That's, especially as Italian Americans, that's the most important thing to us, is to be able to go visit your grandmother, your nonna, or go by your parents' house. And to like today, my mother-in-law stopped over, but really we had a wave like between glass. I couldn't give her a hug. I couldn't give her a kiss. And it's, that to me is, that's what's breaking my heart more than anything. Yeah. I cannot embrace.
Yeah. I'm off work and figured I'd take a trip to New Orleans to see my parents, but I can't because of their age. That's the world we're in today.
Yeah. I mean, to think about that Italian Americans or Italians wouldn't be allowed to hug other Italian American or other family and friends. I mean, isn't that just like, that's gotta be like hell for an Italian. That's probably what hell is, right? It's like not being able to give your family and friends a hug and a kiss.
Yeah.
Italian Twilight Zone.
Well, Tony can speak to, you know, being down in New Orleans, because we were down there with David. We flew back Sunday morning after everything had been canceled, and I then went right into quarantine. But it was hard with so many people down there, because I've been going about 6-7 years now, so I feel very close to a lot of people down there. And like, you just have to sort of throw fear over your shoulder for a little bit and hug these people, because at some point it's, you know, they're people that you care about, but also you don't know when you're going to see them again. You know, it's like I remember being there last week, or almost 2 weeks ago now, and thinking that every time that I approached someone that I hadn't seen in a year or knew I wasn't going to see till next year. And I said to myself, okay, well, I'm going to have to take this gamble. But I don't know, for me,
it's human nature to in second nature, I guess, to say, I'm not going to let this stand between, you know, especially when I left, you know, hug my mom and dad goodbye. You know, I don't know when I'm seeing them again. So, you know, that same sense of, you can't let your fear get in the way of your natural affection for your loved ones. But you do have, you know, we do have to be smart, and we do have, no one saying go visit your parents in the 80s every day after you come out from a day of work or walking in a neighborhood or going to a grocery. But you do have to be smart and take precautions when you can. And there's certain things that, you know, where we are in this this crisis right now.
I think that one of the scariest things about this particular virus is that we really don't know. Not everybody knows they have it. So you could be a carrier,
right,
but you don't know if you're going to pass it on to your grandmother, to your mother. That's the scary thing, is that a lot of people, they are fine. They have no symptoms. They don't have a fever. They don't have the dry cough. They don't have whatever else comes along with it. So you don't know, but you don't know what you can bring to somebody else. And that's been the toughest thing, is that I hope I don't have it. I don't think I have it, but still, like, if I give my grandmother a kiss, she's 92 years old, you know, am I going to be the one to,
I shot a wedding on March 14th, right as this thing was breaking. The bride refused to change the date of her wedding because she was supposed to get married that day and whatnot. And nobody danced. Nobody was standing close. Everybody was social distancing on the dance floor.
Wow.
And I was thinking about something similar to what you just said. You know, you had a lot of older people, grandmothers, grandparents, parents, you know, and it was the wrong place for them to be on that day, you know. And who knows what's going to happen? You know, somebody, you have a room. She had 260 people that she invited to the wedding. 125 wound up showing up. So they all canceled off the date, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would, if I was invited to that wedding, I had to be there because I was filming it, but I would not have gone to that wedding. No way am I going to put myself at risk in a situation like that. And especially an older person, I couldn't even imagine them being there. You know?
I mean, you think about a wedding doesn't cost $100. I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been really a struggle in that industry. And, well, I'm sure every industry is affected by this, you know, in a terrible way, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, nothing is open. We can't go anywhere. Those little sandwich shops that we go to are great, you know, but I'm standing 6 feet away from everybody. You know what I mean? You always get the one asshole that wants to stand next to you, you know?
There was a place, I think it was Luigi's Pizza up in Rockaway, and he actually, which was really smart, like he used tape on the ground, like this blue tape, and he actually like distanced, he put boxes so he knew where people could stand and place their order, which I guess in a way, it's actually brilliant. You're right, because at least it gives people, you know, maybe it's an illusion of safety in a way, because I mean really, I don't know, 6 feet, 3 feet, I mean,
right.
If you cough or you know, if you sneeze, it's these particles are still going to fly all over the place.
We mask.
Yeah. And actually, speaking of the mask, we were talking a little bit about repurposing businesses. I just saw a little while ago Andre Say, he's the mayor of Paterson, New Jersey. He was at what they actually make is bags. So like if you go to like the New York Public Library, you get the little bag with the lion on it. This place in Paterson makes it. So he shut down his whole bag. He actually made all the bags for the census, for the 2020 census. He made all these bags they have. He shut down production and is only making, I think he said, 100,000 masks a week. And he wants to get up to 200,000 masks by next week. And I mean, I guess in these times, we have to adapt we have to adapt our life. So I think that's
making hand sanitizer.
Yeah, I know. I think prisoners were making it, and also like different distilleries. A couple of distilleries right here in Jersey. Mm-hmm. They were making hand sanitizer, which is. I mean, it's crazy. Go ahead, Eric.
I'm sorry. I want to jump in the school nurse because I'm paranoid. Because I was in New York a few days right before the 14th. It was the 13th anyway. She says if you have 2/3 aloe and 1/3 rubbing alcohol, you can make your own hand sanitizer at home.
Really.
2/3 aloe, 1/3 rubbing alcohol. You make your own.
And actually, I know it's funny. We were in New York a couple of weeks ago too. We were at the Eastia Club.
We were.
So Helmina's like, oh man, did we get anything?
Lapsed, did they, Anthony?
I'm sorry.
It's past 14 days though, right?
Oh, from there, yeah. I gotta tell. I mean, I don't know if you guys have been to this club in Astoria, Queens. We're kind of going totally off topic here. It's called the Eastia Sports Club, and like they make the food from the area of Italy, or I guess it's, well, Croatia, Italy, it was 1,000, it changed hands like 100 times. Yugoslavia, it was...
Iridente.
What was it?
Italia Iridente.
Yeah, amen.
So, I mean...
Unredeemed Italy, it's called.
Oh, really?
As a matter of fact, in the 90s, I think, when there's somebody was telling me, in the 90s when Yugoslavia fell apart, there was actually a movement to have it reunited to Italy, and the Italian government basically said, we got enough headaches. Thank you. We're good. So it's but yeah, Dalmatia, Istria.
But
Bastianich.
Yes, exactly. And I tell you, the food is so different than like what we were. I guess most of us are Southern Italian, right? I guess the majority of us are Southern Italian.
Yeah.
So I mean, to eat like guampi or, you know, a stuffed cabbage and you know, goulash is like, you know, it kind of blows your mind. But it was the food was delicious.
Anthony, what is it, a restaurant?
Eric, how would you describe that?
It's like, all right, it's like the Monte San Giacomo Club in Hoboken. Yeah. Very nice, beautiful, with a limited menu that you could sit down and eat at. And it's like half club, half restaurant. So, yeah.
Sounds so like we need a big reunion party when this is over.
Oh, hold definitely.
On, sounds good. Now, do you
I want mean... nothing but parties when this is over.
Yeah, we need our own version, like VE Day, VJ Day. We need everything.
Right. Hold on. Do you need a membership to go to this place?
No, you could just go in, sit down and eat.
And what was, like, on the menu?
Anthony's the expert in that. Anthony, go ahead.
So there was, like, what I had was guampi, which is pretty much stuffed cabbage. It was delicious. My wife, she wasn't too crazy about her dish. It was kind of like a mixed grill. So it was like a piece of, like, of grilled chicken, a piece of grilled pork, a piece of kielbasa, and it was okay. I mean, it wasn't probably it wasn't really her cup of tea. And then there was what did you have, Eric? Something was like with the noodles and like the
it was like a beef goulash, but the sauce was like it was very good. It was very good. It was like it was really a gravy type because it was like brown, and like I'm not gonna get into sauce gravy stuff right now. Pieces of veal in it. It was very good. I love the soup even better. The yota.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. That was delicious. It was like sauerkraut soup with beans. I love bitter. I love bitter vinegar. I love that taste. So.
How long is the live show, guys? I'm starving. Yeah, we've been talking about food.
I'm on their website right now looking at the menu, trying to find the menu.
Yeah, good luck with that. Good luck with that.
I just want to point out, because we edit our show, so when we do our show, there's sometimes I'll say something and Pat won't respond, and I'll look, and he's on his phone. And it's always Italian food porn. One, you know, pastieras, or what was it? Last episode, he's looking at something. So that's normal.
So I think that we've had a great conversation tonight. I really appreciate all you guys, you know, guys and gals, taking your time out of your very busy schedules to come on the show, and you know, just kind of talk about. Yeah, I think it's good to talk about what we're going through.
Why don't we all go to the Istrian Sports Club when we hit?
I'm ready. Season. When can we go?
They have pictures of Gal Ahmad. This is like.
Leave it to Pat. Pictures of Gal Ahmad.
Pat's going to be the guy that's going to go in the kitchen. Hey, wait, how do you make this? Because once we make this, and then you do this. You know, I heard that if you do this, it's different. Pat analyzes food like the scientific way, right, Pat?
Yes.
Can we just tell a story about the bread maker, Pat?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
In my neighborhood, we had a very famous bread maker that closed down their business, and I wanted to potentially reopen it because it was the most unique, wonderful bread, and I won't mention more about it. And we went to have a meeting with a guy, and there's a secret family recipe for five generations. My family's been in the same neighborhood since 1900, so everybody in my family had eaten it, and it was just not replicable. And about 15 minutes in to this guy about to sell us the secret recipe, Pat deconstructed what the secret was. And I've never seen a person deflate more quickly at the table. I mean, he was like, he wanted nothing to do with us after that. So Pat's analytics come in handy.
Pat's got some superpowers over here.
It took Pat about an hour and a half on Christmas Eve how to make one of the coffees with the Neapolitan macchinetta, because of the ratio of the water and the beans and the ground. It took him an hour and a half to explain how to make
it. How was it, though? The coffee was good.
Oh, it was excellent. Top five that I've ever had in my life.
Only an Italian could have a top five cup of coffee list.
You have no idea how much time I put into that, because the secret of a Neapolitan pot is weighing the water and weighing the coffee.
Was that breaking news?
What do you want from me? This is my life.
Wait, say that again. So you have to weigh the coffee grounds and
the water.
Really?
Yeah.
So what's the ratio?
One day I'll bring you on, and because I have notes, and we'll come on, and I'll go through. There's a grind. I forget. I have notes of. I take copious notes when I do these things to try to break the formula. But yeah, it's doable. It's doable. If you, I think 12 cups, 12 espressos, the big pot is like a liter more or less. And you just work back from there.
All right. You have to tell me this. This I want to, I personally love the Machinette. That's one of my favorite ways of drinking coffee. It's nothing like it.
Do people out there, if they have the 12 cup, we can all make coffee at the same time.
You're talking about the old one that you have to flip over, right?
Correct.
Okay.
The cafetiera.
I call that, I try to, I take a lot of inspiration from the Hasidic Jewish community, how to remember your heritage. So on holidays, like Christmas and Easter, I bring out the pot and I don't use the modern electric machine. So as not to forget.
Let me ask you a question. I know we're kind of going way off topic, but do you use, there's a little, at the Belmont Tavern, they use this, it looks it's like a glass, crystal glass contraption thing, and they put a little tea candle in it, and then you put the coffee on top of that to keep the coffee hot.
I mean, some people do that. I don't do that. That's not my thing.
Uh-huh.
I think once it comes out, it's done. It's perfect.
Okay.
You drink it at different stages. I like coffee that's much cold. Like, my mother loves hot coffee. I don't like hot coffee. I like room temperature coffee, maybe a little bit tepid, a little bit warm. But I think that my Neapolitan coffee combo works very well.
Huh. Really, only Italians could have this conversation. It's unbelievable.
But I'm a sick person, and this is
no. You're not.
I mean, it's serious. I'm not asking for like. I know I'm whacked, but.
But you make life interesting.
Yeah, I do. But I mean, I try to approach coffee from a scientific. You know, it's funny because we had Cafe Unimatic's Elizabeth Cardiello on our podcast yesterday, and we were talking coffee science. Coffee very much is like baking. It's a science.
Yeah.
You can be artistic and creative and inventive when you're cooking, because it's not much formulas. Coffee is really much more cooking, where you need formulas, if that makes sense.
Well, it's chemistry, right? It's chemistry at the center of it.
But these are the kind of conversations that when you lock Italians up in their house, they come up with. This is the kind of stuff that we produce. Lock us up.
That is not crazy.
Jailbirds. And it's not even like jail, like Goodfellas, where they actually had a good time.
That isn't crazy. He isn't whack.
Think about in Goodfellas when they cut the garlic so thin.
Pat, I'm gonna give you.
I was whacked. I was way whacked before this happened, but I'm only getting worse. This has only brought out the worst in me. So I'm sitting around with my scientific scale weighing grams of coffee.
Pat is the conoscitore di ogni cosa. That's his name.
Exactly.
You heard it here and you heard it first. Conoscitore di ogni cosa. You could ask him anything about anything. You name it. It's some holy rock in the middle of Calabria. He'll know about it. Where to find red coffee from Borbone. He'll find it.
Yeah.
Do it all. Pat could do it all.
That's why we love you, Pat. You hear me, Pat?
Did I offend him?
He's weighing the coffee.
So guys and gals, I do want to thank you very, very much for taking time out again, like I said, to come on the show, and I hope you do more of these kind of things, because it's fun, it's different, it's something that kind of gives you something to do on your quarantine nights.
I got time.
Yeah, well, we'll get through this. Come on, everybody, get through this.
So I do have I don't know if you could do it, Michaela, but I have a request. Can you sing us a little? I know it's not the proper. Oh, nice. Can you sing us a little something?
What do you want to hear?
whatever comes to your heart.
Something Sicilian.
Yeah.
How about my heart goes out right now to all these children, because and again, this goes back to this whole idea about fear and stuff. And I just wish there was a way we could let the kids know it's going to be okay. Just, you know, let the adults know it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this. So I think what's really soothing is a lullaby.
Nice.
because the first song anybody ever hears is a lullaby. So this is for John. This is an old Sicilian lullaby, right? E bello sto caruso la mattina, caro se ricordi, caro se ricordi in ta giardino, oh, il mazzo pieno da parire. Ieri truccati fisci, ieri truccati fisci cristiano, e sarò spiegato tipo di lucchiano, con una siraduna. On una sera d'una la mattina, riposa l'acqua, riposa lo vento, riposa la sirena, riposa stu caro.
Nice, beautiful, bravo, beautiful, wonderful.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I think we kind of needed that. That's a beautiful way to end it.
Yeah,
a beautiful way to kind of put us to sleep, put us at ease. And again, guys and gals, thank you so very much. God bless you all. God bless your families. I can't wait to give you all a big hug and a kiss. And when this is over. We are going, whether it's the Istria Club, whether it's the Belmont, we are going somewhere.
My house. We'll do everything in the backyard.
Just night after night after night.
Amen. I love you guys, and be safe out there, and we'll see you soon, all right?
Thanks, Tony.
Take care. Ciao. Thank you. Ciao. Bye. Ciao.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors. Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guero, The Italian Enclaves Historical Society,